Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine, and welcome, Sarah Ellen.
Thank you, Susan. All the way in Arizona, Susan. How are you this evening?
All the way out here in Tucson, where I am looking up at the moon, almost full, sailing above me. And the mountain range in the background turning red from the last rays of the sun. And the drink in my hand is not nourishing herbal infusion. It also is red, and it's made from cactus fruit. It's not just red, it's magenta. It's like, you know the color of pokeberry?
Mm-hmm.
That's the color I'm drinking right now. And it's really lemony. We put a little honey in it. It's very good, I'm sure, given the color, that it's loaded with anthocyanins, which are, of course, world-class antioxidants. And, it's just so much fun to be here with my dear friend Betsy, who wrote her story in Breast Cancer Breast Health! And to continue our friendship of... Wow, I guess we've known each other over 60 years now.
so beautiful. Wow. Wow.
Yes. So much. So much fun. And I'm continuing my explorations of mitochondria. Continuing to make mitochondrial collages. Inspiration from where I am. I made two collages from elements in my sister's garden.
Oh, are those up on the site, I wonder? I'll have to check it out.
Those are not yet up on the site. I think the first 30 are up on the site. And I'm to number 57 now. When I get to 60, we'll put another set of 30 up.
Mm, love.
Justine is envisioning them being printed on glass and sun constrained through them.
Printed on glass?
Yes. Yes, the images, the mitochondria collage is printed on panes of glass.
I love it.
Isn't that a fascinating idea? Mm.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So what are you up to this week?
Oh, goodness. It's funny. You are with your friend of 60 years, and I just got home from celebrating one of my best friend's 50th birthday. We've been friends for 30 years. So I was down actually in my home this weekend. Yeah. Had a delightful time.
And that's in more southern Florida?
What's that?
Where did you say you were?
I was in my actual hometown in Florida. So that is Clearwater, St. Pete, Dunedin. Clearwater is my actual hometown. And that's where we stayed one of the nights together.
That's on the other coast from you, where you're living now. Is that right?
We are in the middle of Florida now. We're central Florida. Not on. Yeah.
Either.
But it is a different area. It's about 2 hours southwest of here.
Southwest. Okay.
So.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that was fun to see several old friends. And, of course, my best friend and I get together often. But it was nice to get together with other friends that we've known each other 30 years. And a whole group of us just dancing, singing, having fun. Enjoying being together, celebrating 50.
celebrating being a woman. You know, so many women that are getting in touch with me seem to be filled with despair and seem to feel, you know, that we have lost everything we've worked for. And I said, not true, because the changes we've made are much deeper changes. There's a worldwide movement of women, all countries, not getting married.
So true.
Women in their 20s and 30s who don't need a man to protect them, support them, make money for them. That's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
What did John Muir say about conservation? He said, you never win. You don't say, all right, we've conserved the last wild place. Now we can go rest. He says, if you work as a conservationist, you will always be working. And, you know, my sister said to me, so what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to do what I always do, what I have always done. I am going to continue to champion women, speak for women, of which I am one, and support the groups that support women. I'm going to continue to be a high priestess of the goddess. I'm going to continue to teach people about herbal medicine. And you know, if he does what he says, and he's a big liar, so we can't even believe that he will do what he says, but if he does what he says, he will make it so that nobody can get any health care and nobody can have any food. They're going to really need to know what we know, Sarah Ellen.
I was thinking similar things, and yeah, the prices of food. I was just looking at holiday food, and I could not believe the price of pasture-raised turkey grown on a small farm. I was shocked because, you know, we used to
We're talking about over $100 for a 20-pound turkey, I would guess.
We are talking $160 for a 15-pound turkey and $180 for a jumbo, which is over that.
Wow. Wow.
I was blown away. We're not having turkey here. But all of these farms, and, yeah, the prices are going up, like, a lot. I hear you with the food inflation. It is really just
– that I didn't say anything about inflation. What he claimed that he was going to do is to send all of the workers away, all of the people who actually take care of stuff in the hospitals, all of the people who actually harvest food.
Right, right. Yeah, they've been doing big stories on that.
He has claimed that he will send them away. If he does that, there will be no health care and there will be no food, except for those of us who know how to provide our own food and our own health care.
So crazy.
So I'm not the. So I'm obviously not the only one saying this, right?
Right. You know, that was a story on our news. And then to hear, they interviewed a farm here that said that they wouldn't feel the impact of the worker plan because, and then when they said why, you know, it's just, it backs up what you're saying because, okay, maybe they wouldn't because they are paying a really high wages to not just wages, but license fees to participate in the visa program. So each worker costs them a certain amount to bring over, and then they have to agree to pay them, you know, like $20 an hour or something. So that's sadly, you know, not what many of these workers are getting when they come here. They're getting a lot less than that. So, you know, it's just interesting.
And if they start getting $20 an hour, how much do you think your turkey is going to cost you?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking because I was looking at the turkey prices at the same time. It's like, my goodness, the turkey will be $300 next year.
Let's keep teaching herbal medicine because I think it's a skill that's going to be in high demand. Let's keep teaching as many women, as many people who are interested in how to take care of themselves so that they aren't afraid.
Yes, blessed be.
Let's keep doing that. So I'm committing to doing that, to continuing the things that I have done. Will it be in a more adversarial climate?
Yeah. And at the same time, as you said, it may create a need that really opens up receptivity of the people who are the ones whose hands and hearts the medicine belongs to anyway. So it's just
people's medicine.
Medicine
because the people always survive.
That's right.
Tonight, I am interviewing Jamie Della. She is a shamanic priestess and an author of 10 books, including A Box of Magic, Ritual Herbalism and Spellcrafting, and The Wicca Cookbook. She remains deeply connected to her Mexican roots. And she's going to be with us tonight at 9:00 East Coast time. That will be, 7:00 out here in Tucson and 6:00 in Los Angeles and so on and so forth. And forth as we go around the So stick with us until that time or come back to hear Jamie Della talk about her Mexican roots and her Wiccan recipe. Yum, yum, yum. Brew up some good food. The fall always makes us hungrier. It's not just the holidays. It's, I think, this cold in the air and the slant to the light does something to make us say, Betsy and I just I brought goat cheese with me, and we put together a lasagna.
Ooh.
We got some organic tomato sauce and some organic whole wheat and no boil pasta noodles and layered it in there. And she said, oh, we have to get some organic beef. And I said, I'm with you, girlfriend. Us old ladies need more meat. Our mitochondria are calling out for it. So usually I make a meatless lasagna, but in honor of our old ladyhood, we added some nice organic ground beef. And, of course, that meant we had to add a whole bunch of garlic.
Yum, yum.
That's what we said, too. We said, oh, gosh, we don't get to eat it till the show is over. But, okay, here goes. Enjoy more time together. So, anything else you want to share with us before we start answering questions?
No, thanks for asking. We can turn it right over to questions. I'm not seeing hands yet, but maybe if I let everyone know how, what you need to do to ask a question is press 1, and once you press 1, we'll see your hand go up in the queue. I'll announce your area code when it's turn to be live with Susan, and we'll go from there. So I am seeing 2 hands that have been raised by pressing 1. And we'll go right to the first area code, 845. And 845, you are live.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hey. What's I'm calling about making an oil from some leaves. And I've done comfrey before. Well, that, you know, but that's comfrey. yeah, right. So I was trimming some cannabis, and it's so sticky. I thought I really shouldn't. It was like a third trim, you know. It wasn't even like the first or second. Yeah. Like getting it really, really good. Because I found even the tiniest leaves to be like just a little bit harsh. So I thought, I don't want that for you know, smoking purposes. So, I'll put it in a bag. I was thinking, why don't I try to make some oil? I think I remember you saying that you really thought oil was more effective for pain than other applications like ingesting or smoking.
It really depends a lot on your pain. And what you like and what your tolerance is. When I visited my brother last year, who's a grower, and I talked to him and other growers, I was astonished that they mostly use it topically.
Like an oil?
Like an oil.
Do they make a salve or just plain oil?
Just whatever they want to make, right? With the coconut oil or olive oil.
Yeah,
just like you would any other plant oil. And they, and for me, I do not like the sensation of oil on my skin.
I know what you mean. I feel kind of like the same way I do.
So,
I do. It's kind of a mixed feeling of, it's weird,
Like if I'm lying there getting a massage, that's okay. But then I want to wash it off right after.
Yeah. It'll get real stinky, too, if you leave
it
on.
It'll
stink everything up,
Who gets out of the shower and puts on oil. And, like, for me, and it's very, very personal, I'm not saying this is true for anybody else. Just, for me, putting oil all over my skin or anything like that just feels like I can't breathe. It's not that my skin can't breathe, that I can't breathe.
Oh, interesting.
So, a little hypericum, my face, and especially my lips if I'm out in the sun. I actually have a roll bottle of hypericum with me here in Arizona and Texas to put on my lips.
Really?
Yeah, a little roll. I think Frontier sells some little roller top bottle. You just carry it in your pocket.
Yeah, I've heard about those. I've heard about those rollers for the oil. People that make comfrey sometimes sell them, and I used to buy something called DMSO.
Uh-huh. I remember DMSO.
Uh-huh. And that comes sometimes in a roller.
Roller thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you can get lidocaine in a roller application. Deodorants come in rollerball. But these are much smaller than those.
I don't like deodorants in rollerball. They grab the hair and they pull it and then
pull it.
I'm just thinking I just infected the whole bottle now, you know.
Right.
So you don't like oil. You don't like oil, but you tried it and you said it was effective.
I prefer tincture and smoke for pain relief.
So you make your own tincture?
Yeah.
No. You do?
Yes.
Well, tell me. Tell me how. I never tried it.
I just put fresh blood in a jar, fill it up with 100-proof vodka, and shake it now and then, and let it sit as long as possible. Doesn't hurt for it to sit for a year.
But say that one more time. You just take a dried buds and put vodka in there.
Fresh buds.
Oh, it's got to be fresh. So it's too late now.
Fresh buds.
Oh, okay.
Fresh buds. Right.
Oh, that makes sense now that I hear that in my head.
Right.
Yeah, that's a lot of water content in the fresh, though, but... I thought it needed oil for the extraction. Are we just getting
If you want to ingest it, it needs to be in an oil base so your digestive system can handle it.
I'm not a fan of edibles, but even though you look
online or talk to people, they'll say, "Oh, you can't make tincture out of fresh bud." And if so, you have to carbolize it, and you have to use high-proof alcohol.
But we
don't find that to be true. I guess it depends on what kind of finished product you want. I want a finished product that I can take 3 or 4 drops of, and that will give me 3 or 4 hours of pain relief.
So you're just starting probably stuff that you made a year ago now?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, cool. What color is it? Is it like a dark, dark green or?
Usually it is pretty dark green, pretty color.
Yeah.
And it depends on the variety and, you know, a lot of variables.
But your brother likes it in the oil on his knees or hips or whatnot?
Yes, he has one knee replacement and the other one is scheduled. His other one was 17 years ago, so he's going to be
more than
the remaining knee. Comfrey, he does. I ain't in charge of him.
What?
He drinks Diet Coke. Not nourishing herbal infusions, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but but there it is, you know.
Right. There it is. I get it. Hey, you know, to each their own. He found the plant for him. Good for him.
Right. Good for him.
He's
an avid gardener. He loves to garden. And he loves to dehydrate. He always sends these wonderful bags of. He has many dehydrators. He dehydrates just about everything he grows. He dehydrates leeks. And then I powder them up with salt, so I have leek salt in the kitchen to sprinkle on vegetables before I roast them.
Oh, yum.
Yum.
That's good with ramp leaves, too.
Yeah, I'm going to take some
That's one of my favorites.
Some of Betsy's rosemary hub. It is very, very nicely trimmed. But I'm coming over here every day, and I'm saying to the rosemary, grow out of control so I can harvest you. Grow out of control. It's like prune to this nice round mound here. And I told her, and I don't know if you've heard, but rosemary has had a name change.
No, I did not know that.
So the botanical name of rosemary used to be Rosmarinus officinalis, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now it is Salvia rosmarinus.
Salvia.
It's a kind of salvia, so we have to envision rosemary now as a sage.
I think I might have run across that, but just thought it was like an alternative, you know, You know, the classification things that different places do.
It's the new official name.
But it's the new official. Okay.
Right.
Hmm.
Linnaeus ordered things according to obvious physical characteristics. And that helped to really, like, is...
relationships.
Right. Is sage and rosemary, are these really different? Because the mints, of course, really are incestuous. They cross
people. And you look at them and you say, I don't get it because, it looks different to me.
Because they look different. But then when you look at the DNA, when you do cladistics, you can see where the concurrences are. And,
that's so cool.
Rosemary is actually a kind of sage.
Sage and rosemary are my favorites in that family.
And Betsy has lots of flowering sages here. You know, the ones with the big tall stalks and beautiful flowers. And the hummingbirds have been coming to them today. Oh, how wonderful.
Oh, the Russian sage, the hyssop?
No. They're really colorful blooming sages. They come in reds and oranges.
I don't know them. I'm not from, I was never down in the part where you are in that desert area. I've never been there.
They grow the blooming sages in New York, too.
Okay, I'll have to keep
Many of the flower beds
look for
have these very floriferous sages with big, bright, racing.
In the city, like the botanical gardens? Where do I have to go?
Not just the botanical gardens, like people's ordinary gardens. These are common.
No, I really do want to go. It's
plants.
You wouldn't
necessarily have to go anywhere. I'm saying they could be used like in front of an apartment building.
I wonder if that Catskill Mountain Nursery down there in Samsonville might know. Mike Adamovic, I think, Adamovic, I forget how to say his name. I think he runs the show down there, and he knows a lot about it. Does he know a lot. So is this a native plant?
No, absolutely not.
I didn't think so.
I'm telling you, these are cultivated plants that are cultivated all over.
Yeah, I heard you say cultivated.
In warm
I'm talking
and
about
cold
just the same,
climate
yeah.
because they have such beautiful flowers and are so attractive to hummingbirds and other pollinators.
Do they plant them every year?
They are annuals, yes.
Wow, what dedication. That's so nice.
So you wouldn't know that they are sage. They don't smell like sage. They don't look like sage.
Okay.
Any more than rosemary smells or looks like sage. But if you imagine a healthy sage plant, and think about how many flowers it has and how it holds those flowers way up top. And they're pretty big for a mint family plant. What's happened is that ability to have a lot of flowers and to hold them for a long time has been cultivated, and the colors changed from that kind of light bluey purple to a really dark purple to a really bright red. And the stalks made another 12 inches taller, and the flowers doubled in size.
Wow.
And they're sold as bedding plants, and people grow them all over, and they're here. Wow, the flowering sages. Betsy's growing some, and the hummingbirds love them. So growing some.
We can all think about growing some
flowering sages next year. Pretty common and easy plants to find.
I wonder about that greenhouse down at the college in Stone Ridge. I haven't been in there either. They were building it when I was attending, and then I was teaching there. And I always said, let me go in, but I never did.
Oh, that's a good place to go and check it out.
Have you gone in there?
I don't get down south very often.
Down south? Stone Ridge.
Way south of me. If I'm going south, I'm probably going to Manhattan. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Manhattan feels easier than Stone Ridge to me.
That's what I'm saying.
I hear what you're saying.
Stone Ridge is a lovely, lovely community, and they have some very wonderful
historical
healers. It's some wonderful healers live in Stone Ridge too.
Oh, sure. It's a beautiful landscape, beautiful homes.
Truly.
Lots of nice things to do there. Well, thanks for all the talk about the flowers and the sage and the rosemary and the red, and enjoy your stay. Thank you for talking with me tonight, Susan. I love you.
Love you back. Great blessing.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Night.
Goodbye.
All right. And I'll remind everyone, if you have a question for Susan, all you need to do is press 1, and that will get your hand raised, and I'll announce your area code when it is time to go live with Susan. I'm seeing 3 hands right now, and the next to dial in from the 336 area code. From the 336, you are Susan.
Oh, hey, Susan. Green blessings to all you beautiful ladies. Green blessings.
Green blessings. Thank you. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, my goodness. I only have, and I'll make it quick because I know there's other people too. But I have thrown in. But first statement, I may not always get the call in or whatever on Tuesday, but the most enjoyable thing I look forward to every week, Tuesday, why? We've got our green goddesses. We've got Susan Weed and her amazing. You have no idea. I don't live anywhere close to you. We don't talk. Your influence is unreal. It brings me peace. It brings me calm. I can't put it into words. Does that make sense?
I am so honored that you give me that place in your life. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me that. Thank you for that gift.
And I'm very, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm very aware and conscious of who I let in and who influenced. And there's no, I'm not sure I can tell, and I won't, but there's no BS with Susan. It is what it is. It is honesty. It is from the heart. It is, if you don't like it, well, we examine where you are and come back. There is no apology for Susan Weed. That is where we should strive to be, no apologies. Because the first time I ever called into you, and I said, well, I didn't have the balls. Well, we don't need balls. We have this.
There you go.
Wait, what? What? We don't need. That has never, ever left me, not one single solitary day. But I have woke up and went through my day, and if I encountered something, we don't need balls. So that is how much joy you bring to somebody that you've never met.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm excited. All right. This is my first question. All right.
Okay.
I have got a, thought I was a cat person, but you know, cats don't, I don't choose my cat. My cat sees me.
I was going to say,
so
it doesn't matter if you're a cat person or not. It's the cats who decide, not you.
Yep. They chose me. And I currently have a colony, if you will, of, I'd say, 15 to 20 cats. I don't know where they come from. I don't know why they came here. But I will take care of them always because they chose me. Well,
are you capturing them and taking them to the vet to neuter and spay them?
Well, I've got 3 cats.
That is the most important thing you can do for them.
Yes. I've got through half of them, and then we're working on the other half. And yesterday, I go out in the morning for my feeding of my goats and my animals, whatever. And then the cats find me when I come out in the morning. Well, I have one, and I named her Luna. I've got one that she was limping, and I thought, wait a second. And these cats aren't cats that you can just You can't just run up to them and pick them up. Like, if they want you to love on them, they'll come to you, but you can't go get them. She was limping, and I've never been able to touch her. But yesterday morning, I was able, I think that her right leg, I don't think it broke because it's not dangling, it's not hanging, it, you can't put pressure on it, and there's nothing in her pad, there's nothing, but I think it's fractured. Like, you can almost feel the fracture, but I don't think it broke, if that even makes sense.
Well, there can be, if we imagine a stick and you break the stick, if the stick is dry, we hope it will just break in two. But if the stick is green, you get what's called a Greenwood fracture. And it fractures the length of the bone rather than across it.
Yeah. It's almost like you break. If the tree's dead and if it cracks, but then there's that, when you break it or you pinch it, there's that green in the center and there's still something in the center holding on. It's not dead yet.
No, that's not what I'm talking about at all.
Oh.
Small stick, not a tree.
Okay.
And if you take a dry stick in your two hands and break it across something, you're hoping to get two pieces, right?
Right.
Was a broken edge between them. If the stick is not dry enough, it won't break that way. But it will sometimes break going the length. So you'll still have one piece. You won't have two pieces. But nonetheless, there'll be a break in it. That's a Greenwood fracture. That's a way a bone can break sometimes, depending on the stress it has endured. So that's how it can be broken, but not broken.
Okay.
So what we would do, what you would do for any kind of fracture or even a sprain would be to, insofar as is possible, to get some comfrey into her.
Oh, that was my next question.
Everything is comfrey bad. Do you drink comfrey infusion?
No, I'm not saying comfrey is bad, but I'm saying that if you research and look and any vet in
that's,
my area.
I'm sorry, that's simply not true. Do you know that I have an entire comfrey conference of people saying that is a big lie?
It is a lie. And I've heard you, it even says that comfrey is dangerous to dogs. I've even heard you say.
Well, let me remind you that I have drunk a quart of comfrey leaf infusion every 5 days. For the past 35 years. That's hundreds and hundreds of gallons of comfrey leaf infusion. And before my surgery, I had a full body scan because they're not going to put someone under anesthesia if their liver is going to collapse. So they have to look at your liver and the health of your liver. And my liver was so strong and so healthy that it was able to survive and deal with 30 hours of complete anesthesia. Obviously, if comfrey was going to any way impact you, we would see it in me. There's a fallacy in thought here. And here it is. Comfrey contains a certain substance. This certain substance is toxic. Therefore, comfrey is toxic. What is missing from this is the understanding that this substance is not one thing, but over 400 things. Comfrey contains a few of a type of substance which has over 400 varieties, some of which are deadly. Personally, have helped an enormous number of animals with a variety of grievous injuries. Heal with Comfrey. And if you go to the Comfrey Conference, which is at wisewomanschool.com, and you pay a one-time fee for lifetime access to all 15 people talking about Comfrey, the question and answer sessions, in addition with those people are recorded in there, and there's lots and lots of shorts of people talking about personal experiences with Comfrey, especially with healing bones. One woman who was in a car accident where her foot was on the brake and her foot was smashed
yep.
and broke her ankle. And she talks about the incredible healing. So anytime an animal I try to get them.
You go
and just
I
come through,
and
I find adding yogurt or milk to it makes it really palatable to animals.
Yep, and I think, and I mean, I knew your beliefs and your thoughts on Comfrey, and I agree with you. I think that it was my insecurity of me not trusting that what I knew and what taught me that I know this is what I can give her, but let me just check and make sure with Susan. In other words, it's that doubt, and there shouldn't have been any doubt, because if I consume it, I mean, I give my dogs Comfrey. My goats take Comfrey. I even give my pigs Comfrey.
Good for you.
Why am I doubting? And my vet came out.
Yep.
My large animal vet came out. And she goes, so you do what now? And I said, well, this is what I give my pigs, and this is what. And you think that's okay? And I said, well, I consume it. I mean, I consume Comfrey and nettle, and like I use arnica. I mean, I have a whole thing of herbs. So if I consume it, I will give it to my children. Why wouldn't I give it to my animals? Like and they just look at me like deer in the headlights, like I'm stupid. And then some days I feel like I'm stupid, and then other days I'm like,
I don't
bitch,
think
you
they
are not.
Looked at you like you were stupid. I think they looked at you like they were stupid.
Well, I took it as they looked at me as I was stupid.
And I understand,
it,
and
it
I'm
worked.
Saying you can untake that and think of it as they're being amazed. And in wonder that why didn't anyone ever tell them about this? Because they are.
Or why do they know this?
They simply never encountered it, you know? Humans are like that. If we never encounter something, we don't know that it exists. And then when we encounter it at first, we can hardly believe that it exists.
Now, see, I'm the one that says, oh, my goodness. Now, how did you know you knew that? Now, what was that again? And then I'll go and I'll research and I'll learn it. And then I go from there and then I just, like, it's a whole spiral of my OCD on another level. But,
comforting. You're on the right track. I'm so glad that you called to confirm. And I do confirm for you that you're doing the right thing for these cats. Thank you so much for taking care of them.
And second question, you don't know me personally, but I am not a fan of small children, it's not that I'm mean or hateful, it's just not my thing, if that makes sense. Even though they're my own grandkids, it's like, no. I raised mine, but now I have them and whatever. But my daughter's son is coming up on 2 months old. My children never were this way. Anxiety ridden. And when I say that, it's from my observation. Flinch, fist, feet clenched, like just not happy, not observant, not, other words, it's always, it's just anxiety, almost like anger.
It is certainly true that every single one of us is different. I'm sure that your observation is quite direct and quite true. So then we want to ask ourselves, what could we easily do for a 2-month-old to ease anxiety? So the easiest thing, of course, is to do something non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
To every time you think of this child or mention this child's name, that you a moment to really feel serene. Drop your roots down. Connect to the earth. Breathe that with this child. Entrain with the child at 2 months old. It's very easy to do. And entrain into the deep-rooted stability that you have.
Well, that makes sense. To the point where, like, at the time he eats, he is so filled with something that it, he can't, like, actually digest the food. He'll intake the food, but he spits it up. So it's been formula changes, it's been this, it's been that. And I told my daughter, I said, Lily, there is.
What food is he eating at 2 months old?
God, it's whatever the pediatrician. At first it was the regular infant meal, and then it went to the Nutrimigen, and now it's straight up nothing but aminos. It's pure amino. It's $70 a can. I wouldn't care if it was $5,000 for a can. But this child cannot ingest the food. And in my mind, it's not the food. Holy shit, what is going on inside this small being that he's not even 2 months old? And
I disagree with you more. I think the whole thing that's going on here is this child has never once in its entire life been offered any food.
Mm-hmm. And she would not.
It's been offered mixtures of chemicals.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with to solve or fix or change this problem.
Mm.
Because I understand that you're probably not going to be able to, like, get your daughter to breastfeed or to buy breast milk. The possible next best thing is goat's milk. We had some friends who adopted a baby, and they were not under any circumstances feeding that baby any kind of formula. And I agreed that they could share my goat's milk, and that we would keep close watch, and the doctor kept a close watch to make sure that the baby was getting well-nourished. And around 7 or 8 months old, there was some nutrient that the baby was lacking, but by that time, the baby was old enough to start eating foods that had that nutrient.
Hmm.
So that worked out successfully for that baby. And we know that there are a variety of milks which can be used, have been
mm-hmm.
used, everything from cow's milk to wolf milk to horse milk.
Anything.
To feed infants. Right? This child, I suspect, would do very well with any actual milk.
I don't know. Because it's because this is a lot of different things that the digestive system has been challenged with.
No.
And
yeah. My theory is.
So you know that I have a great belief in yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do my best to make or buy the very best quality yogurt with absolutely nothing in it but milk and culture. No filler. No dry powdered milk. Milk culture. Period. And just start, you know, letting baby suck it off your finger.
You ever look at the back?
Because, of course.
Of a formula can.
I know. When I taught a nutrition course, I put up the label from some adult.
Mm-hmm. No.
Because they make the same kind of stuff for old people, right?
Yes. Yeah. You don't get me. That's a whole other phone call. Do not get me started on that.
And so I know that is why I am so like, oh, you know, breathing very deeply here over the fate of this child, and looking to see how you can help, how you can offer this child some food, some actual food, without saying, what are you doing? You're feeding your baby chemicals.
Yep.
Stop feeding your baby chemicals.
I know.
You can't do that. You know you can't do that. We know you can't do that. They want to do that. You can be the yogurt finger over there.
You can do things. But you just don't need to say you're doing, but you can do things.
Correct.
That you know, but it's almost like, okay, like you said, is it the child?
No.
Because that child has not been offered. The child is new. The child is new in its environment. So it's only God that you've offered it, and apparently it does not like what you've offered. And I don't know why, Margaret, but you just look at the ingredients on that label. So
I totally agree with you, and I hope that the yogurt and the calming vision will work well. I understand. So I'm going to wish you green blessings. And good night.
Bless you. Thank you so much. Good night.
All right. And looks like there are two callers that have pressed 1 to let us know that they've got a question. We're going to go right to you in the 701 area code. In the 701, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, it's so nice to hear your voice. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. And I know we don't have much time, but I wanted to share.
We have as much time as we need.
Okay. Well, oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. I had a moment today that I really wanted to share with you about a full circle moment of coming back into my own power.
Ooh.
And for a long time, I think I saw you speak for my first time in probably 2012 in Eugene, Oregon, is where I'm at. And I was really just enlivened by all of your words. But for many years, I felt that herbalism was just really out of my reach. You know, I've heard you say many times, like, you know, it's this medicine that's right out your front door. And I was like, maybe her front door, but not mine. I felt that if I were to engage in more modern medicine, that it was like I was almost not worthy of herbal medicine. And so I had years of toggling back and forth with the urge and desire to work with plants more, you know, with confidence, identifying plants out there, creating these beautiful remedies. And yeah, I don't know what it was. I just always felt like it was unattainable. So I've been taking your advice to go and, gosh, I don't know if you said it, if it was an inch wide and a mile deep, but to really sit with one plant at a time. And so the last 2 years, I've been really just working on identifying, you know, when I'm on my walks or in the forest, I'll see lemon balm or spot a tree that I now know is hawthorn and, you know, saying, okay, one day I'll work with you hands on hands and create my own remedy. But still, I didn't find that power at all. And this summer, my grandmother passed away. She's very much missed in a dear love of mine. And when I came home from her funeral, I needed to do something with my grief, something physical. And I took a walk in my backyard that used to be a goat pasture, and the hypericum was everywhere. And I picked a red or a yellow flower, and I made sure I saw that red oil. And so with confidence, I made my first remedy, which was hypericum oil in organic olive oil. And today I poured it off and put it into my own bottles, and I gave my husband a massage today. And I know that's a mouthful, but oh my goodness, like to pour that beautiful red treasure into a bottle and put it onto a body that I love, I had to just call and share that and say thank you, because you've helped. Through years of this blog talk show, you've shared knowledge that is creating real change in people's lives. Had a really, what you say, it's always easy, and I don't know what it was, but it took that. And so it felt very good. So thank you for all that you give to this world.
You are welcome. And thank you for sharing that. Ooh, I have goosebumps. That is just so... It's one of the things that I love about herbalism is you never stop getting goosebumps.
It's not invigorating. I can't wait. I just got chickweed coming up on my walk today, and I was like, ooh, what's next?
It's not like
it's amazing.
You go, oh, ho, hum, there's dandelion again. How boring. No, you go... Dandelion there. How amazing.
I know. Always. I can't wait till the first freeze so I can dig that root up. So thank you so much. I often call and I'm not able to get through, or, you know, life happens. So I'm really happy that I was able to connect with you today, because it was a very special day for me. And it was thanks for all the wisdom you share.
You've made it a special day for all of us. Three blessings. Good night.
Thank you, Susan. Good night.
Oh, so beautiful. Like, I could hear the hypericum just, like, singing through her and almost
right?
Through her grandmother. Like, yeah. So amazing.
Yes.
So, yeah. Thanks for sharing all that. Oh, so beautiful. And I have the goosebumps, too. So, all right. With that, there are two... Yes, there are two hands up. That's just one. The next caller, I'm not sure if you're using what type of technology it is, but I don't see your phone number, so I'm letting you know you're open. Mm-hmm. You are live.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. My name's Melissa. I'm calling from Perth in Australia. How are you, Susan?
I am doing well. Thanks for being up at an odd hour.
No, we're actually middle of the day, so we're all good.
Okay,
I
good.
Love listening to your show. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's wonderful listening to the call today. It just makes me feel like I'm in the right place. But I have a bit of an embarrassing question, I guess, but I definitely don't want to go down the route of over-the-shelf medication. But I went to the doctor a couple of days ago, so it hasn't been diagnosed yet, but I feel like I'm experiencing thrush, but it could be, I don't know, it's something like that.
Your mouth is sore?
No, in my vagina. Yeah. And it's not,
a yeast infection.
Yes. And it hasn't been constant, but it's been, I feel like it comes up around the times that I'm ovulating and when I'm bleeding. And
I believe you are correct in that. So what we're talking about here is we hear a lot about the gut microbiome. And we don't hear nearly enough about the vaginal microbiome. Right? Candida, thrush, yeast lives in your vagina.
Yes.
In a healthy vagina, that is going to be there. When the pH of your vagina changes and hormones can change it, so at ovulation and menstruation, there are hormonal changes, and that allows, actually changes the acid alkaline balance in your vagina. For some women, it's a reaction to the fluid that carries the sperm, but that changes the pH of the vagina. So it can be very irksome. And it can be, for some women, very tenacious. I take it you haven't had it before, because if you have had it before, you know almost instantly what's going on. Often there is the smell of bread, which is why we call it a yeast infection. And it is. It's candida yeast, which causes thrush. Right, so there's that yeasty, bready smell to the discharge. If you don't have that yeasty smell, if it's a fishy smell or the discharge is foamy, then it's probably not a yeast infection. It's probably not thrush, candida, it's something else. Down there, sexual and reproductive health, the wise woman way, goes into all the possibilities and gives you lots of options for what you can do.
Who is that?
My book called Your book. Down There.
Oh, yes, I have heard of it. Yeah.
Okay, you got down there. Good. Go check it out. Go read about yeast. Go read about the other possibilities. There are things you can start doing right now before you get a diagnosis from the profession.
Yeah. I know I'm not going to follow what they say anyway. I just want to know what it is so I can start doing
But there are things you can start doing before you know what it is.
And
the sooner you ask, the better. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't let it get entrenched. All right?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Green blessing.
Green blessing. Bye.
Bye.
And it looks like there are two callers that have pressed one and have raised hands. In the 401, we see your hand and your line is open. You are live with Susan.
Hi there.
Hi.
Just tuning in. I have two questions. One, I have made garlic honey in the past just by putting the cloves into a jar of honey. But this time, this last batch that I'm trying to make, I'm seeing the cover of the jar swell and needing to, like, let out. Okay, that's normal. I haven't had that before, and as I was laying here waiting for you to pick up, the other cover was a plastic cover on the other.
There's sulfur in the garlic.
Okay.
And it does outgas.
Okay, it needs to burn.
There can also be some slight fermentation, but none of that is going to be harmful. There's nothing in there that's going wrong.
Okay.
It's all.
So just release the gas and carry on. Okay.
Right. It's the remedy isn't dependent on it being in a jar that's tightly sealed.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't sure if the compounds I wanted were coming out in that gas.
No.
Okay. Very good. My other question, my sister is, I've been studying herbs and listening to you, and I did an apprenticeship about 15 to 20 years ago. My sister's coming around and starting to learn more about plant medicine and things like that, and she messaged me today and asked what I thought about some detox program things she saw online, and I've never done one. My inclination is to, one is a metal detox, so in my mind I would find a way to use cilantro versus buying some product that has all this other stuff inclusive on it. I just wonder what your thoughts are on those detox programs for, metals and things like that. Do you have any that you recommend, or, how do you feel about?
So here's the really important thing to understand. We are organisms that will sequester unusable heavy minerals only if we lack the minerals we need. So if there is a lead or cadmium or mercury in your body, it's probably because you're eating a diet that doesn't have enough minerals. And most detoxifications demineralize. So what's going to happen is, let's say, just for the sake of saying, let's say they work and get these heavy metals out of your body. Now, you're twice as vulnerable because you're demineralized.
Mm.
And since you're going to continue to eat what you've been eating all along, you will simply recontaminate yourself. But it will be much worse this time.
Mm-hmm. The other was a parasite.
Instead, we can really get to the root of the problem, which is not heavy metal toxicity, but lack of minerals.
Mm.
Of minerals, not toxins, lack of minerals. When we are mineral replete, then we don't have to worry about heavy metals. Literally, scientifically, I'm not just making this up. And the fastest way to get mineral replete and to sop heavy metals out of the body is by eating seaweed.
Hmm.
Cilantro does it, but no one's going to eat enough cilantro to make it work.
Okay,
seaweed,
I wonder if a tincture,
seaweed, you can actually... No, you have to have the stuff in your body to bind to the metals. The tincture won't do it at all.
Okay.
So seaweed, especially kelp seaweeds like wakame, kombu, nereocystis, bullwhip kelp, but any kind of seaweed.
Mm.
And I once asked Mr. Seaweed, even the sheets of like nori they sell? Yes, he said, even the sheets of nori, any kind of seaweed. Yes, they're like with mushrooms. There's, seaweeds that are different than others. But in general, all seaweeds are going to remineralize and sop up heavy minerals and radioactivity. Heavy metals. Then in Japan, they test the seaweed for heavy metals and radioactivity. Then they feed it to people. Then they test their stool. And there's more heavy metals and radioactivity in the stool than was in the seaweed.
Mm.
So even if there are metals and radioactivity in the seaweed, the body does not absorb those. The seaweed attracts and carries out any of those other things.
Hmm.
Has your sister traveled to a foreign country?
Nope.
Does she generally walk barefoot where there is human feces?
No.
then the possibility of her having any kind of parasite is about 0.00001%.
Okay, she saw something about dogs. She has dogs that lick her face and animal, cats and animals that are in her home. And so she, I think she read something.
And she's going to stop and she's going to do a cleanse and then they're never going to lick her again.
Kind of what my response
was. So let me tell you a rather horrifying and true story. There was an MD who was stationed in the Pacific Islands during World War II. And he was kind of bored. And he was looking around for something to do. This island that he was on was not seeing any action. And the people on the island had a parasite. It was a parasite that lived in the fresh water on the island. So they all had the parasite because they all consumed and bathed in the water. And he had medicines that killed the parasite in the water and killed the parasite in them. He was a happy doctor, and he thought, what a good boy am I, and the war was over, and he left. And 25 or 30 years later, he's retired, and he thinks, I'm going to go back to my island and see my happy, healthy villagers. And what he found was that they were all completely messed up, unable to digest the normal foods on the island. Because the parasite had been providing them with necessary things. You see, people get frightened when they hear words like toxic and parasite.
Right.
These words carry an emotional charge. They are words that for most of our lives have been linked to violent rejection, fear. And I understand her fearful impulse to reject and get rid of toxins and parasites. But it's pointless if she's just going to re-expose herself in exactly the same ways. Better that she have some of those in her body. Because what happened was their immune systems went haywire when they didn't have the parasite. And the immune system started reacting to everything, so they couldn't eat any fish anymore. Right? So I wouldn't argue with her about toxins. I wouldn't argue with her about parasites. I wouldn't argue with her about her desire to do something about those things. I would offer her seaweed. Is a way to remineralize and take away not only heavy metals, but radioactivity. And I would suggest to her that she choose from among a variety of fun and easy things to strengthen her immune system so she can continue to enjoy the kisses of her pets.
Yeah, my first question was, do you know if you have, are you having some kind of symptoms or anything? Like to
no,
you, or do you read
this
something?
Isn't about, this is not about symptoms. This is about fear. And so she's going to be afraid even if you talk about symptoms. And it doesn't have to be real for her to be afraid.
Fair. Yeah, that's true.
But if you offer her something that she can do, then she doesn't have to be afraid, right?
Yeah,
you
could say this.
Here's some astragalus tincture you could take every day. This will really build your immune system. It's one of the 10, you know, most important herbs in Chinese medicine, and it's safe enough that if you accidentally took the whole bottle, nothing bad would happen to you.
Yeah, I mean, we joke because I say I was a hypochondriac, and when I learned about herbs, it all just went away because I felt educated, I felt empowered, and I could do something for myself.
Yes. And that's what she wants to do. And she needs some help moving through the initial fear. There's always going to be some fear when we step into our power and when we start doing things differently. We are going to be afraid. That's a righteous fear.
Now, I don't know that this fear is going to get my sister, who's a very picky eater, to eat seaweed. Is there a product of a seaweed, you know? What is it?
Gimme. Gimme.
Okay.
G-I-M-M-E. Gimme.
Okay.
I've seen it everywhere. Right. It was for sale in Austin. It's for sale here in Tucson. It's for sale in New York. Every place I've been, you can get gimme. And it's the little squares of nori, and it comes in flavors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This is up her aisle. Yep.
Just up her aisle. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. This is not, this looks absolutely ordinary and fine.
Mm. And it's a good, reputable company, and that's the thing I always wondered.
And if astragalus is too outre for her, perhaps some elderberry. I'm sure she's heard of elderberry and knows it. Elderberry is very good for her immune system. And propose to her, as I just said to you, that it would only make sense to get rid of parasites she might have gotten from her pets if she were to no longer have pets. Right? But so long as she's going to have pets, it would be keep her healthier to keep the parasites that strengthen her immune system so they don't bother her.
Especially if it all seems to be functioning well.
Exactly.
Enough.
And they are not bothering her now, right?
Right. Yeah.
I
gotcha.
So
consider it a pet.
I was looking at a picture today, and there were three kinds of fish in the picture. There was a big shark with its mouth wide open that didn't have any teeth. And there were a bunch of small tuna. And then there were smaller fish, And the tuna, they were like maybe 40 or 50 tuna, and then hundreds of these small fish. And the tuna were making the small fish into bait balls, which they were then shooting into the mouth of the shark.
Oh.
Right, and the caption said, we don't understand how things interact in nature. We don't. And the following that was an article about trying to teach crocodiles not to eat toads in Australia because they imported cane toads to Australia, which if you eat one, you die. So you don't get a chance to learn not to eat them.
Right.
You eat one, that's it. You're dead. And it comes the next.
Mm.
The population of these I think the crocodiles like plummeted by 70% in 1 year. And so they started getting the toads and taking the real poison out of the toads and putting something that would just make them really sick in the toads and then leaving them out as bait until they all learned that eating toad would make them really sick and they stopped eating the toads. But so why did they bring the toads to Australia in the first place? To get rid of some bug. See, you just don't know what's going to happen when you start getting rid of things.
Right, when you try to take control.
When you're, you know, like the whole idea about parasite, like, you know, it's not, if she doesn't have symptoms, it's not her. Even if there are some parasites, I sincerely doubt she has any. But again, I wouldn't argue with her.
It's like a, you know, a $300-something cleanse program. I'm like, just wait a second.
Let her give you $100, and you'll give her advice, and she'll save $200.
I will tell her that you
said I said that. No, ever since I learned about herbs, honestly, I am in the same boat as you. I just want to share my knowledge of what I do know, because people need to be more self-advocating for their own health.
Thanks so much for your call.
Thank
you. Everything works out. Call us in a month or so and let us know what happens, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right. And if there is one more call, and you are dialed in from the 239 area code. From the 239, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And thank you for holding space for all of us women. I just loved hearing everybody's stories this evening.
Yes. Stories to make you smile this evening.
Yeah. So I'm calling because I'm having an issue, some kind of issue with my bladder. Not really sure if it's an infection or what. I'm 51. I'm still occasionally bleeding, but not every month. And just feel like I have kind of like urgency. Sometimes I'm urinating frequently. I feel like sometimes it keeps me up at night where I'm waking up several times to urinate. And, yeah, just want to understand my bladder a little bit more.
A little bit more. So I would recommend down there.
Yes.
Which covers everything down there. And also, it sounds to me from the few things you've said, like you're probably in menopause.
Yes.
Which to me is a period of about 10 years. And that can definitely affect the bladder. One of the really nice tonics for the bladder that I like and have been liking more and more is corn silk.
Okay.
And
I've heard you talk about that before.
Yeah. And if you think it's an actual bladder infection, Uva Ursi is excellent to help relieve the symptoms of and often get rid of the bacteria that cause those infections. Yarrow, of course, is a direct antibacterial. And cranberry juice helps stop, or blueberries as well, helps stop bacterial film formation. Do you know about bacterial films?
No, can you tell me about that?
Yeah, like a bacteria on its own can only do so much. But bacteria can link together and form a film. And if they do this in places like the bladder, so that they actually form a film over the entire inside of the bladder, cranberry or blueberry contain natural breaking up enzymes that break this film apart.
Okay. Yeah, I actually have some cranberry juice in my fridge.
Or prevent it from happening if you start drinking it soon enough. Certainly the research shows that pumping fluid helps when there's bacterial infection, but I don't like to advise women to do that if they're feeling urgency. Because then you're going to feel more urgency if you start drinking a lot. Don't dehydrate yourself, but don't, you know, I've seen things like, you know, you have to drink a quart of fluid every hour. Don't do things like that unless, you know, you have an infection with a high fever and it's impossible to get to a hospital and you have no anti-infective herbs. Right. Then we're just going to, like, press your kidneys and your bladder because there's nothing else we can do. But in general, I like to be just a little easier on the system if it's in the state that yours seems to be, which is, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. There's certainly, you know, you're not experiencing pain, it seems like. You're not experiencing fever, any kind of symptom that would cause alarm.
No, not really.
Yeah.
It's just it's more annoying than anything sometimes, you know, and it's on and off. It's not like it happens all the time. Sometimes it flares up. I haven't been able to pinpoint it. Sometimes I feel like maybe if I eat more sugary things, maybe it clears it up, but I can't really say for sure. I've been eating a lot of yogurt. I have the cranberry juice.
Great.
Sometimes I'll, throw it in the blender.
You throw in the blender?
The yogurt with the cranberry juice, you know, just to make it a little bit. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Makes it a little nicer, like a smoothie.
Right.
I've thrown berries in.
Oh,
I have
blueberries.
Like frozen berries. Yeah, blueberries, right. Pomegranate, cherry.
So I've done... Betsy and I sat here and peeled pomegranates off of her tree this afternoon. And this has been an amazing year for the pomegranate juice. Two smallish trees. These trees are, I don't know, maybe 12, 15 feet high. They're not very big trees. And there's, I don't know, 100 pomegranates on the tree. It's really just a...
Oh, nice.
Right. And I said, how do you preserve it? She said, we can't preserve it. We have to eat it all. Keep feeling.
Oh, wow. Can you freeze them?
No, that's what I asked her. I said, can't you freeze them? She said, no, we have to eat them. Keep feeling. Yes, yes, I hear. I must eat pomegranate. Oh, my life is so difficult. So I think we need to say goodbye so that I can say hello to my guest. I'm so glad that you called tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Green blessing.
Green blessing.
All right, I do see Jamie is here with us.
Jamie Della is a Jacana witch, a shamanic priestess, a magical mentor, and a Wiccan author of 10 books, including A Box of Magic, A Guided Journey to Crafting a Magical Life Through Witchcraft, Ritual Herbalism and Spellcrafting, The Book of Spells, and The Wicca Cookbook. Jamie's books, teachings, and one-on-one mentoring focus on how to deeply connect with your unique spirit and co-create with an alive world. Jamie remains deeply connected to her Mexican roots via her writings, such as the award-winning Latino Writers and Journalists, and her new historical fiction magical realism book, The Last Daughters of the Dawn. And that's D-O-N, not D-A-W-N. That's Daughters of the Dawn. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you for having me, Susan. I loved how you giggled at that. And pomegranates feature in the book. You'll be happy to know.
Because when you have them, you have to eat the pomegranates.
I might have to include a bumper crop year for pomegranates just because of the clock.
Your latest book is A Box of Magic. What a great title. How did you come up with that title, and why did you want to write a book called A Box of Magic?
Well, I was in actually on a book signing tour for my book called The Book of Spells, and I went to go get a reading, as one does when one is on tour for magical books. Go get your reading. And the psychic reader in Santa Cruz said to me, there's somebody here with us. And he started describing, she's a bigger woman. She's got this pixie haircut. She's got this cat-like accent. Oh, that's Connie. That's my Wiccan mentor. She crossed over 15 years ago. And he said, oh, well, she says, she's laughing now. I said, that's what she does. She giggled a lot. And so he goes, oh, good. He goes, well, she wants you to get a picture of her and carry and take her on your next book signing tour. And so, you know, when you get a message from your mentor from beyond the veil, you just go do the thing. And so
that's what I tell the apprentices. I say, you just have to do it. You don't question it. You don't argue with it. You don't ask for details. You do it.
You do it. Did they give Anana a chance to ask a question? No. They did not. You just do the thing. So I got...
Not if it harms yourself or others.
Right.
But if you're being told to harm yourself or others, it's not from your mentor, really.
That's different, right? If it's screaming at you, that's the what I tell people. If that voice you hear is screaming at you, that's fear. That's not spirit, because spirit knows there's a lot of time. Spirit comes from a different place. And so I listened to spirit, and I put a post on Facebook looking for a picture of Connie DeMasters. Does anyone have it? And her daughter responded to me. This is February of 2020. And she said, here's this picture. So she sends me this picture of her mom. And then a couple months later, the pandemic happens. And the daughter, Alexa, calls me back and says, you know, I've been cleaning up. Would you like all of my mom's magical curricula and education dating back from 1950s? I've got handouts from Manly P. Hall. I've got information from Dr. Leo Martello from his collection, and all of this wisdom that came from the Eye of the Cat witch shop in Long Beach, where she had been a teacher and then went off to be her own elder high priestess of the Druidic dragon, Crimson Dragon Druidic Craft of the Wise of America. And so I got this box of magic, 23 pounds of rituals, and it was incredible. I couldn't believe it. And then I didn't know what to do with it. I was just like, what the heck am I going to do? And so one day after about a year and a half, I heard Connie, my mentor, say, tell them about us. And I thought, oh, you're right. People have stopped talking about mentors. There had recently been a quiz on a wet witchy, new witchy website, and they asked people how they learned about the craft, how they had come to the old ways. And they gave them options like, on the internet, a book, a festival, a meme, and no one said mentor. No one said a person taught me this. And I felt like what you're doing is how I felt. And I called them. I'm like, you can't do that. How do you think this was passed on for years and centuries? And so they immediately changed it, and it gave me the idea to write the book, kind of like a Tuesdays with Maury. Except for it was a Greek Yaya was the teacher and a Mexican Mama was the student, and the subject was witchcraft. And so, because I had sat at her knee for 3 years, just absorbing, and applying the lessons to my life, not just regurgitating spiritual information, but embodying it. And so that's why I wrote the book, and I based it on the 12 steps of the hero's journey. And so there's 12 lessons and 12 meetings with Connie, and takes me through the time that I had just exited my Saturn's return and met my mentor at a Women's Spirit Winter Solstice event a couple of months after 9/11, right when I had come out with the Wicca cookbook and the teen spell book. And I thought, oh, shit. Here come the Christians. I'm scared. And then I met my mentor, and she helped me have the courage to go to Barnes & Noble's and book signing events and speak with a microphone in 2001 to full crowds about Wicca and what seasonal lifestyle is and what the wise woman ways are. You know, you were one of my early mentors, reading your work. I have Healing Wise sitting on my desk right here. You know, and how important it is to just honor those shoulders that we stand upon.
Thank you, and thank you for taking your fear in hand and being willing to stand there, Jamie, and be that for so many other women. What a beautiful story, a box of magic. I had a very dear lover of 32 years who died actually 13 mm-hmm. years ago. And I visited her just before she died, and she had packed up a box of all of our correspondence. Well, at least the letters I had sent to her, I had the ones she had sent to me. And this year, the bookshop in her hometown decided to honor her, and so I opened the box.
How precious
is that? I hadn't opened the box. I had left the box sealed for 13 years.
Oh. The smell, does it just take you back?
They really are boxes of magic, aren't they? They're like time capsule. And to sit there and read the words I had written to her, you know, we're talking about like 1980s here.
Talk about one of the early forerunners.
Right.
What are we doing out here on the skinny branches?
She's been dead for 13 years, a long time ago. It's fascinating to re-find yourself in that way. So tell us more about being a mentor and being mentored. I see this is important to you, and it's important to me, so I'm really interested in what you have to say about it.
Oh, thank you. So I had this relationship with Connie, and there was another woman before that, Jeanette Reynolds, who introduced me to more face style, and Connie was more the strict gardenerian, all hail ye guardians of the Eastern Quadrant kind of way of doing things. And Connie always said to me, you need to know that if you're on a desert island, you can do your magic. You are earth, your body, water, your blood, air, your breath, fire, your spirit. It is in you. These are all tools to help you learn how to live it. And hearing that over and over again and being able to come to her and say things like, I was just 34 and so I was still pissed off at my mom for things that we did together, essentially. And Connie would say to me, I'd say, but how can I say I love the goddess and still have mommy issues? And she said to me, the goddess is the big mother. Every woman is a little mama doing her best to be a reflection of the big mama. Mm. I wouldn't have got that out of a book. You know, I needed a person to tell me that.
Oh.
And then when I wanted to make more excuses, she said to me, Jamie, it gets cold and lonely in the shadow. And just with that deadpan, are we done? Are we done with the temper tantrum? Can we be done now? You know, and so she was a Virgo and I'm a Capricorn, so we both could be like really like curt with each other, you know, and it worked out. And so now as a mentor, I try to do my best to be like, oh, I forgot, this is a soft Cancer. I gotta be nice. I gotta be kind. This one, help her along gently. You know, really try to meet her or him where they are. You know, it's really important to me as a mentor. I have a structure that it's based on a box of magic and the hero's journey and a magical lesson that I see in each of those that can apply to your life. But my mentees lead where we're going. To me, it's kind of like if I were walking in with them to a festival, and at this table there was astrology, and at this table there's different goddesses, and over here is candle magic, and over there is colors, and over here is astrology. And I just walk behind them and go, where are we going? Which table do you want to go to first? Yeah. I'll go. I love all the tables. You know?
And then, which tool shall we take out first?
Yes, exactly. And it's, you know, what's drawn to you. And then because I've you know, really claimed this Mexican root, this Chicana matriarchy line, I tend to attract some people who are of Latina heritage that are confused about blending Catholicism with witchcraft. And I said, oh, honey, we got rituals, though. You know we got rituals. We got that down, you know. And we love to celebrate. And I said, it's a matter of, you don't need to ask Mother Mary to talk to Jesus on your behalf. You can go directly to the divine source. That's what this path tells you. And she said, oh. I said, just like, you know, when your Nana dies and you pick up her photo and you look at her, you talk to her, you don't talk to God to talk to Nana. You know, you just talk to Nada, and you can do the same with spirit, and it's not blasphemy to choose to speak to the divine that lives within yourself and that greater great source. So I feel like you learn a lot. Oh, my God, every time this year someone would be talking about something that I'd be working through, and it's such a challenge to not overly identify and still hold that place of guiding. Even if you get triggered and, oh, I know that one, you know, whether it's, you know, a money issue or overworking yourself or whatever it is, and you might be kind of feeling that same vibration that they're sharing. And then I come up with a ritual to do for them, and then I go and do it too. I'm like, oh, we all need this one.
So you are honoring your ancestors. And do you then encourage others to look into their ancestry?
I actually try to expand that idea of ancestry because I've been spending my entire life studying my ancestors, and there's that moment that you have, that I have, and I know others do, when you find an ancestor who's unsavory. And it's shocking, and it stops people a lot of times in their ancestral work. And I always believe that your ancestors can be of affinity. So you could choose Frida Kahlo for your ancestor. You can choose someone of a lineage. We just lost an amazing woman who I would call my ancestor now, Karen Aguilar, who helped with the Northern California Women's Herbal Symposium. And she was a bear of a woman, and she is now on my ancestor altar. So it's not always looking at your grandparents. My best friend, like you were mentioning your friend, my best friend who passed on 10 years ago, she's on my ancestor altar. So I think it's really important to break down those rules that say it's got to be someone of your blood lineage and expand that ancestor to be anyone who's on the other side. And
thank
I encourage
you.
People to...
Thank you for that. That is very beautiful because, you know, we live in a country in which so many of us have such tangled lineages.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always a little unraveled around it. Like, how can I be respectful of my ancestors when my line, when the information was destroyed? So there's so little for me to know.
Mm.
And the way I worked through it was that all women are my ancestors. I'll just, you know, being an Aquarius, I'll just take it all. Thank you very much.
I have all of humanity.
I'll have all of humanity. Thank you.
Oh, I love that. Yes. And that's the other thing. You know, I grew up on a land that our family had been on since the late 1700s. And so for me, there was like never any getting away from family. I forget, you know, too, that there are, you know, or if you're adopted, who is your family? Or if you, you know, have a different family of choice, allowing that to all be more than okay. You know, Frida Kahlo might be on your ancestor. Like, she's a good one. There's a good woman. We'll put her there. You know, and then also that idea that you can put that candle next to that picture and have a conversation with them for what unfinished business there might have been between the two of you, if you knew that person or if you didn't know that person. Or for me, I chose today, you get an option when you get invited to speak with Susan Weed. You get a couple of dates to choose from. And I chose this date because this is my maternal grandmother's birthday. And her name was Della, and my middle name was Della. And then when I divorced my husband and decided to go back to another name, I chose not to go back to any of my stepfather, my biological father, my husband's, my grandfather's, anybody's last name, and kept Della because it means of the. So, and I wanted to be like, maybe I want to be Della Luna, Della Tierra, you know, Della Montañas. And I was thinking all these things. And then I thought, no, I am ever evolving. I'm just going to be Jamie Della. I'm Jamie of the. I'll let you know. Just
wow.
Keep on your toes. We'll be back. So this is Della's birthday, Della Martinez's birthday, and
Happy birthday, Della.
Yes, and then Della crossed the month before I was born, so she crossed 2 days after her birthday, and then 5 weeks later I was born right before Christmas, so that's how I ended up with her name as my middle name. So that idea of, you know, my ancestry being a part of me is so integral. It's like my blood, you know, the blood. And
it's
so
blood. It is.
It's the blood. There it is again. So, yeah, so and I find to that when I have questions of, you know, sometimes, again, because of where I live, being on my family land for so long, I had some questions of being, how we were thrown from that land, how the Californios and the Americans took, you know, 55% of Mexico, and what that was like for my ancestors and being on that same land, I feel that pain. And so I can go to their family cemetery in Yorba Linda and take cemetery dust and heal my heartache. And when you have those ties back to your family, you can do that too. You know,
the unseen hurts, you're like, what is this about? Why am I so mad? You know, about, and it's something because you're tapping into your that ancestral roots, because if you can pass on curly hair, why not pass on DNA memory?
I was just visiting my sister, and my sister's into the genealogy of our family, which, as I said, is unraveled and very difficult. And she did, however, find a picture of our father's either grandmother or great-grandmother.
Mm.
This woman looks so much like our father that it is eerie.
And you start
to get that sense of there's a certain thing that your ancestors are blessing you with. There's a certain look that your ancestors are looking into you with, and you deserve their blessing.
I love that. I used to like to, when I was a kid, there was mirrors all over through the 80s. I mean, there was such the me generation. Mirrors were everywhere. And so when I would have the bathroom mirror and I would hold the medicine cabinet mirror in such that way that you could see your reflection going back, back behind you, if you put two mirrors, and you put the two mirrors together, you can see this reflection of yourself mirrored back and back and back. And I would name each grandmother back behind me as far as I could go. And try to do like what you're saying, like, and we have the same eyes, and they bless me with this story, and there's all the different things, and try to feel that generational love.
That is so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, it was like something you do as a teenager when you're getting in a big fight with your mom, and I go, okay, I have grandmothers, okay. Though.
I got the lineage.
Well, you won the battle.
It was pretty funny being with my sister, my daughter, my granddaughter, my sister's daughter, and her daughter.
Oh, it's so beautiful to have all the women together.
And to have every hand on the table reach for the salt at the same moment. It was glorious.
Oh, how neat. Those are the moments, I think, that they just land in your third eye and stay there.
Right.
And you just see them.
Right. So tell women and anyone who's listening how they can get in touch with you.
They can get in touch with me on jamiedella.com. It's JAMIEDELLA.com. That's where you'll find out about my mentorship, my books and articles. I also am on Substack on Writing the Magic. It's a weekly newsletter that I put out. And Instagram and Facebook at Jamie Della Wright.
Jamie Della
Wright, W-R-I-T-E-S.
Jamie Della Wright. W-R-I-T-E-S. Got it.
All right. Now, what is tarot psychology?
Tarot psychology is a term that I read while taking a depth psychology class from Craig Chalquist, and he wrote a book about the Terra, Earth, psychosoulology study, so the study of the soul of the Earth. So it's very much what, like, we would call land spirits or, you know, something of that era, but I'm a wordsmith, so I love a bigger word like this. It's kind of fun for me to use a word that is beyond just land spirits, because we're talking about the soul of the land. And so, like I said, I grew up on a house that where this hill, they had built the first adobe in 1801, and we moved there in 1976, and I started hearing the voices of my ancestors, but I didn't know they were my ancestors. I just thought I was going crazy. But thankfully, I had a grandmother who was a psychic reader, and she told me, "Well, honey, you just have a porch light on, and those she was southern, she had a southern drawl. Honey, you just have a porch light on, and those spirits, they go, oh well, she's listening, and they come and talk to you." I said, "Well,
You have a porch light on. I love it.
Your porch light is on, and they see it, and so they're going to come talk to you. And so I was like, oh, my gosh. And then she said to me, but you are the incarnate one, and they are in the ephemeral world. So you have dominion over any spiritual visitor. And if you're sleeping, you can tell them, get out.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 8 years old, this is what my grandmother told me. And so then I found out just recently that this hill, there had been a store, and it had been the main crossroad between San Diego and Los Angeles through all the 1800s.
Wow.
So I was really hearing and feeling that kind of Grand Central Station feeling, because
yeah.
there was a store here and the first adobe, and it was the epicenter of our family's 66,000 acre rancho. And so,
yep.
oh,
yep.
so yep. the soul of the land. So there's heartache for what these ancestors did to the indigenous people. There's heartache for what the Americans did to the Californians. And that is sometimes when we go to those places, whether it's a church or a cemetery or a battlefield or an old family homestead, we can feel the soul of the place. And that's tarot psychology.
That's tarot. The actual, yes, the soul, which is built up like a lacquer of all of the experiences and lives that have passed through there.
Yes. Exactly. And the trees and the relationship, because there had been, we would have lived in basically the orchard. We were kind of on the bottom part of the hill. So I was, we were, so I was like, but, and back to that, there was a pomegranate tree that was planted, and the olive trees that they planted in the 1800s, in the late, early 1800s are still there. And there was a pomegranate tree that I grew up with was at my friend's house that we used to eat. And I used to think, God, this is so, this actual fruit is familiar. And because some of those trees are still there 200 some years later, because they can live that long.
Yes. Yes.
And so tarot psychology even comes through the fruit.
Terroir, the life terroir. Of the land, that they talk about it in wine, but I see it mm-hmm. in cheese. You know, in a tragic mm-hmm. accident, I lost all of my goats. And a couple of years later, I got new goats and started making cheese again. Because, oh, this is your cheese. This tastes just like your cheese. And I'm thinking, these are totally different goats. And then I realized, it's the land. They're tasting the land.
Yeah.
I love that. Right? And it is in all of our food. And, of course, my native teachers told me that that's true about the plants, too. That, oh, well, you can say that all yarrow is actually a millifolium, but you'd be pretty silly to think that that was true.
It has a different name some places.
Well, that yarrow that's growing up there on the edge of the cliff in the full sun all day long, that one's real different than the one that's growing here by
mm-hmm.
the lake shore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they pick up on the vibration, I think, of the land, too, and whether it's harsh or inclement, or even
yeah.
the vibration of the people and the collective consciousness with which they're growing in and doing their best to be, or adaptogens going, would you make my job so hard? Why are you making my job so hard?
So hard. And actually, those same teachers told me that if you wanted a plant that would really get you through difficult times, you pick that plant where it was growing surrounded by poison ivy or
mm-hmm.
blackberries, right? You suffered
mm-hmm.
for it. They said that if a plant is growing like that, that's the plant that has the most to offer, so it's the most protected.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm going to have to look for that.
Well, this is not the white way of thinking, which is we always want the most powerful. All right, I was really taught to only take the most powerful if I needed the most powerful, and most of the time I don't.
Right. I found a big mushroom on this property we have in Mendocino, and it's as big as your arm, like your forearm to the tip of your fingers, and it's and it keeps growing. And so I just go there and just be in its presence, just because it's like you said, it survived for decades, as this a mushroom hunter told me that it was probably 30 years old. So I just sit there with it and love it in the way that you taught me in the books years ago. Just sit with your plants. Sit with your herbs. Sit with the living creatures and feel into them before you ask them for their medicine.
Thank you for embracing animism. Thank you for embracing our modern understanding of animism, which is not that we are worshiping anything at all in nature. We are simply saying, wow, it's all alive. Check it out.
That's what someone asked me the other day. What is magic? I said, it's the wonder and the connection and the joy. And like the wonder of like, this is wonderful. We are so connected. Check it out. Wow.
So with that, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to talk about?
So it won't be out for a while, but I do like to tell people that I'm writing this project, The Last Daughters of the Dawn, which is based on the my fourth grandmother's response to the American invasion of California in 1846. So it takes you through her being 16 years old when at her birthday party, a fandango, and they found out they were going to war with America, and how my family, the Californios, survived through the strength of the women to hold on to family and dignity during the 1800s.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. I think that we are reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients, and I think that the threads that you are adding to this weaving are very sparkly and magical. Della, thank you so
thank you.
Much for all that you bring and share and dream and envision. Ah, Sarah Ellen, thank you so much for being there, being part of my life. Thanks for helping me spread the word. It's people's medicine, folks. Herbal medicine, that's it. People's medicine right outside your door. Green blessings. Till next week. I'll be home.
Love you. Stay
strong. Thank you.